Hello, welcome back to Switching Hats. I'm Linus Wilensky.
And I am Thomas Nickel. We are both full-time postdoctoral scientists based here in Oxford and part of an initiative called researchcareers.org, where we share written career stories about the transition of academics into all flavors of industry sectors.
In this podcast, we will directly hear now the stories from a range of wonderful guests who all have their own experience of moving on and using their experience gained in academic research in a fascinating new career.
And that's exactly what might sound daunting to many researchers in academia, this concept of a new career. How do we even start considering such a major change in our work life? And should we consider it to begin with, or better to stay in the clear-cut academic career path?
So in today's episodes, we are tackling exactly these questions and some similar ones. Or rather, we are sure that our wonderful guest will tackle those questions, as she's a true expert in giving career advice. We are joined by Dr. Susie Black from the University of Oxford Careers Department. Welcome, Susie.
Hi, thank you very much.
So to start off, as I said, you also have some academic research experience. You have a PhD, did some postdoctoral work. So can you tell us a bit about your background, how you got from academic research into your current role at the Careers Department?
That ends up being quite a long story, but sure. So I started my career as a researcher with a BSc in biochemistry. And I went and did the traditional thing of going straight on out of that into a PhD. It was in molecular biology that kind of morphed into structural biology. And I enjoyed that very much. It was at the University of Aberdeen. And I was pretty sure at that point that an academic path was the right one for me. So I went on to do, you know, a lot more research and a postdoc and a fellowship and, you know, all the classic things that one does when you're looking to do an academic career. And it took me quite some time before I started to realize that all the effort I was putting in really was into a career that didn't, while very exciting and lots of it is really enjoyable, wasn't really right for me. So I took a sidestep and actually went into a teaching role. Which led into a role working for the Scottish Qualifications Authority, working on how we put together all of the different things that we ask students to do. That was really exciting, but ultimately, again, not quite fitting the strengths that I had. So I chose to step back into research, actually, and going from the structural biology I developed in my last postdoc, I took a role at Oxford in the structural biology department and worked there as a senior researcher for 5 years, actually. And again, it just reconfirmed there's a lot about academia that's really exciting, but also confirmed it wasn't the right career path for me. And I had been involved with the Concordat, actually, since my university signed up in 2008, back when I was a student. So I'd always been interested in this idea of supporting lots of different career types and the fact that academics and researchers can go into a variety of things. And when the advert came up for the ability to support that type of job, I was like, absolutely, I signed up, I got the job, and I've been there for quite some time now and really enjoying it. So it was a squiggly path, shall we say. But yeah, I think I've ended up somewhere that really suits my abilities and my strengths now.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. Quite a squiggly path, but that's probably more common than we think. But maybe we could talk about this, what the typical career path, if there's anything like that, a bit later on. So now that you are in your job at the Careers Department, is there anything like a typical workday or a typical work week that you could summarize?
Yes and no, I guess. So there are similar activities that we do. We spend a lot of our time speaking with our researchers. That's really the main part of the job. And that's something we really enjoy doing. That's where we get a lot of value and where our research community get a lot of value. But equally, we also need to make sure that our researchers are aware of us effectively. There are nearly 5,000 fixed term staff at the university that are on a research contract, and a lot of them do not know that they have this ability to come and ask us information. So what we spend a lot of our time doing is going out to departments, going out to divisions, going out to away days. We get invited and we also ask if we can go, so we do a whole range of these things. So that's probably the next biggest part of our day. And then making sure we keep up with other people. So like in the divisions, there are people who work to support all these types of things for researchers. So we have lots of information in exchange with them. So we speak with them a lot, with other universities and other institutions, just to share best practices. we get lots of email inquiries, so we have to field those. And then we've got lots of projects in the works that we'd like to put into play to help our researchers be more confident about the options they have for their careers. And coming up in March is the lovely conference that we're going to run that's going to show all our staff what they can do with their all the experience that they have as academics, and that takes a lot of organisation. So that's currently ramping up now in our schedule too. So there are things that happen on repeat, but there's not really a standard work week or a standard work day, I would say.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you say one of the biggest aspects of your job is to actually bring the word out there that there is help and that there is advice for current staff to get about their careers. So given that outreach is such a big part of the job as a career advisor, is this also the most difficult thing you would say, or is there other aspects of the job that are most challenging in giving career advice to PhD students, to staff and students? Is it the outreach, or is it something else?
I think it's difficult when you say hard. I think definitely it's the more challenging task for us, so particularly in Oxford, where it's so devolved. There are lots of divisions, lots of departments, everybody's away doing their own thing. We're split across quite a big area as well, not everybody's in the same place. So that is quite challenging, just to find out the right people in the right departments, to get time. Everybody's busy, so are researchers. So, you know, being able to make space for them to realise we're there and come and visit us is quite difficult. So I guess it is the most challenging part of actually what we do, but it's something we enjoy actually a lot. And going to departments is so much fun, and we get to speak to really engaged, really interesting people. So it's difficult to say that it's hard, because actually it's a really enjoyable part, but absolutely it is quite challenging in the university, our size and our organisation.
Susie, in my experience, there's quite a lot of stigma around researchers either asking for careers advice or specifically asking for careers advice when it relates to non-academic roles. Is that something you've found to be the case? And how do you as a department tackle that stigma?
It's a really interesting question, and one we're spending a lot of time thinking about. The difficulty in answering that is the people that we speak to are the people that come forward and talk to us. And it's a really brave thing to do, to come and say, right, I'm going to go speak to this person I've never spoken to before, and I don't know about something as personal and as emotional and as you've put a lot of time in as a career, as, you know, the stuff that you're doing. Is there a stigma attached to it? I think the difficulty is that people find the career service, or assume, I should say, the career service is very student-focused, and people have a lot of perceptions about the career service that they experienced as school leavers, or when you were at school, or perhaps as an undergraduate in a different university, or you didn't have a good experience with that type. So the label can sometimes be difficult, and I think it doesn't necessarily reflect the service we offer. Do researchers share that they've come to us and that they speak with us? Some do. I think a lot of people that really find the value and have had a good experience, and often many of the researchers that seek us out will come back 4 or 5 sessions to work through a particular problem or application or whatever they've aimed to address with us. They definitely do then forward that on, and we see that. I would say that's not the norm, and we're definitely trying to make it more normal to discuss openly the fact that we might not continue in academic careers, that we might need a little bit of support in figuring out how we apply for other things because we've not considered this before. Because at the end of the day, you know, it's a skill like any other that can be learned like any other. There's nothing wrong with saying, I don't know how to think about my skills in a different way, or how to sell them on a CV for something that's not a postdoc. There's nothing inherently wrong with that. But I think the difficulty is that we don't see the people that might believe that. So we're definitely trying to get to the crux of that, I think. And it would be interesting to get more feedback from researchers. But of all the communities, researchers are one of the hardest to get in touch with. We're all extremely busy. We all like to go away to our labs or our libraries or our offices and do the work that we're passionate about, that we love, that we're really invested in. And not many people, myself included as a researcher, took time to lift our heads up and think about what might be out there.
It's funny you should say that, because I actually did have meetings with the careers department when I was considering swapping careers. And it was those meetings that really made me consider that I did want to stay in academia. So I think it can be useful for both perspectives.
I absolutely agree. And I think that also there is definitely a perception that we only see people that are looking to move. And the people that come thinking they don't know, we're going to push them towards moving. And that's definitely not the case. We're not in the business of pushing anyone anywhere. We're in the business of finding out or helping you find out, really, what is the best thing for you? What's the right thing for you? There's lots of right things to do depending on where you want to go. But until you really know where you might want to go, you have no idea what the right things to do are. So absolutely, that's really nice insight there.
So on that note, very related, I think, is how many of the people that come to you asking for help are actually considering careers outside of academia then? Is it a fairly 50-50 split? Are most people looking for academic research careers?
Yeah, it's interesting. I guess I had my perceptions going into the role, but actually in practice, it's about 50-50, I would say, of the researchers that we contact here. We see about half of them are coming to ask us for help with applications for their first academic post. And of the other half, it's harder to break down in terms of real percentages, but quite a lot of those are like, well, I'm in academia, I like it, but I'm not sure for several reasons if that's where I want to stay. And then, of course, there's a whole bunch in there that are like, yeah, absolutely, I'm done, I've had enough, I want to go somewhere else, what else can I do? But I was surprised at the sheer number that we still get that are interested in now being, you know, really smart, actually, and thinking, I would still want to do academia, that's my route of progression. And I'll take on lots of opinions as to how I might do that really effectively and increase my chances of being successful in what we know is a really competitive sphere.
And are there differences between the departments? Is it STEM more inclined to go to a non-academic role versus humanities and social sciences, or the other way?
That's a really good question. And at the moment, I don't think the data supports that there's a super difference. I would say the social science division people that we see tend to be very switched on to their opportunities out with academia. By nature of the lot of work they do is very public policy, or it, you know, they tend to have a lot of interest in areas that have lots of natural progression routes outside of academia. And they just tend to be more aware of those, or already upfront, much more further along in their thinking when they come to us than perhaps STEM students are. Students and staff. So it's an interesting point. And the more we collect data on this, the more that will become clear. But at the moment, there doesn't seem to be any particular strength one way or the other with the different divisions and different disciplines.
Okay, that's interesting. So how does the career service know how best to match the labour market then? Obviously you have an idea of what staff and students are looking for, but how do you know what's coming in from outside? Who do you consult with in terms of what are the careers that are available to people?
Really interesting question. And I would say a lot of the data that we do have and a lot of the work the career service has done and does do on this is very much driven by the student population, because we much easier to collect data there, much easier to know what's happening there. And of course, across the globe, we do a lot of work in looking at what is happening in the labour market. But I have to make it clear that actually we don't push anywhere. So ultimately, we can guide and we can advise, but it's not really our place to say there are opportunities in X, Y, and Z. Because actually that goes against what we're trying to do here. We're trying to think about, as an individual, what are your values? What are your strengths? What do you enjoy? And then from that, really, we encourage researchers, staff, students, whoever, to go and have a look and see then within that, what are the opportunities that fulfill those strengths and values the best? We do, of course, speak with lots of employers, particularly, obviously, I'm interested in research staff. So I want to know of the employers we engage with, are they interested in hiring staff? If they are, why? If they're not, why? What are their perceptions, good or bad, about research staff so that we can try and mitigate that? Or pass on information to our staff when they're doing applications. We can suggest you need to think about being particularly specialist here, or actually you need to put forward that you're much broader here. So while, of course, we do lots of information and think about what are we interested in the wider markets, actually, really, it's not our job to say, oh, you should. A lot of people want us to say, oh, you should go and do this. And if that's what you want, I understand it. I wanted that too. But that's not what we do.
Yeah.
And that's really, if anybody says they're going to do that, I would look at them with a huge amount of suspicion, because, I mean, I can get you a job can I get you a job you're going to want, like, and enjoy in your life? Very unlikely, right? I don't know you as well as you do.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, from personal experience, that's so true. I was like, I don't know what I want to do. Tell me what I should do. And that, I think that made me realize that actually academia was the place I wanted to be. So it helped me make that decision.
You are so not alone. Everybody that comes is in that, I know that I don't want to do this, but I have no idea, always looks at you with that, please tell me what to do. And it's the worst thing. I would love to be able to do that. Everybody would, but it would be the least helpful thing for you at that moment.
So given many people, like I myself, when I went to the career service, exactly as Tom, I was expecting, knowing nothing about how career services work, that they would give me all the answers. So if you have people coming to you with those expectations, they have no idea what their career, in which direction it should go, and expect you to give all these answers, what would be the advice that you usually give to those staff and students?
Okay, this... When I started this role, I found these the hardest cases, because this is where you really feel the pressure of somebody wanting you to give them this like golden bit of advice that says this is what you're going to go and do. In these cases, we have half an hour to speak with a person. So it's quite useful to start being interested in them. So often the career can be a bit of a block, or they're really thinking, I hate my academic job, or I don't like this, I want to go somewhere else, or they're like, I'm really sad or upset that I have to leave this and I have to do something else. So that can be a bit of a block. So sometimes just going for, why did you pick this as your degree? Why did you make that decision? What do you like doing outside of work? Just trying to get a feel for the person and what they value and what they're interested in, so that you can start really just asking questions that prompt thinking about, it's surprising how often things drop out of these random conversations. I mean, they're not random, they appear, but things will drop out. They're like, oh, I always thought, well, if I didn't do this, I might do that. And like, okay, well, why were you interested in that? And that can sometimes lead us towards where we might find opportunities for you going forwards. Or sometimes thinking about, well, what do you enjoy doing in your day versus what do you enjoy less? Let's put it on a scale. I mean, there's never going to be a job that's 100% everything you completely love. There's always going to be some element of that you know, you don't like as much. But let's put these things on a scale and see if something drops out of there that becomes more obvious which type of area you should be focusing on. And that's where we start. And generally, leaving that appointment where there's going to be no resolution after half an hour, right? It'd be fantastic if there was, but there's not going to be after half an hour. But it gives us an idea of where you might begin. And then I generally encourage staff in that position to look very superficially but broadly. What just captures you? What interests you? What sounds exciting to you? And keep a note of that, because patterns will fall out, which is why we tend to see people a few times. They do tend to come back a few times. And then you can start making sense of those patterns and think about what might then suit that person particularly. Tends to be the most effective way to address that.
And this is then usually focused more on what the individual wants, right? Rather than driving it towards a specific career in industry versus academia, from what you're saying, right? Is it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We push nowhere. Absolutely. I have no vested interest in where you end up in your career. None whatsoever.
Can I ask then, I mean, one of the first jobs I ever went for, they wanted me to do some aptitude testing to see if I would be suited for it. Do you think there's any value in these sorts of testing to say people are good at this kind of career versus that kind of career?
I think there's lots of value, but not necessarily how you might think. If you're the type of person that's going to latch on to that. So I remember, maybe showing my age, but back in school, we did this electronic assessment to tick lots of different things about what you liked and what you didn't like. And it would spit out at the end, oh, you should be a... insert the thing there, I can't remember what mine was. Oh, an actuary or a dentist, I think I got. And if you're the kind of person that's going to fixate on that and focus on that and decide that this random program tells you everything about you, then it's not going to be helpful. But if you look at it as an investigative tool, you know, it's really helpful then to get an idea of what your strengths might be. I would do more than one. And I think they can tell you a lot about yourself. And they can give you, which I think is really valuable, language to describe your skills and aptitudes, which okay. I think a lot of us lack. particularly when we're thinking about going outside of academia, because we've built up the language in academia because we've been in it for a while. We all know how we speak in academia. But if we're starting to think we might like to look at things beyond that, we don't know how to describe our skills in any other way other than sounding like a research assistant or a postdoc or a student. And these aptitude tests, skills tests, can really help you with that. So that's where they're really good.
So is it then more about developing your own story or finding out what is it that you really want rather than broadening your experience for all types of careers? Because often we hear staff and students trying to get the skills they need for industry careers versus academic careers, or in general being more suitable for a range of careers. Is it then less that and more finding out and realizing what you really want and going into that direction more than anything?
Okay, I think it's a combination. So when you're in a post and you're in a job and you're doing a 3-year postdoc or a DPhil or you're in something that you're staying in for a while, it can be incredibly valuable to hold that with an open hand. So I'm doing this and I'm interested, but explore other things while you're doing that. Say yes to opportunities. Look at times where maybe you can go and do a collaboration with somebody that's outside an academic institution, so you build that additional. I mean, that gives you skills whether you're staying in academia or not, right? It's not just valuable for leaving, but anytime you get the opportunity to do something that broadens your outlook is a good thing to do, because we never know what's going to be in store for us going forward. So it's just about kind of giving yourself the best amount of experience, the widest amount of experience that you possibly can, not just to set yourself up for a career outside academia if it fails. I mean, that's the type of language that's really difficult. That's the type of language that stigmatizes if you want to choose something else. So going ahead, just, you know, getting really good quality experiences and lots of different things is incredibly valuable anyway for its own sake.
Yeah, it's just, this sounds, it makes a lot of sense. Is this actually what academics specifically struggle with the most, this broadening their horizon, not only living in the ivory tower, doing their research, being focused on a classical research career, but embracing the different opportunities out there? Or is there something else that you see academics struggling with more when it comes to developing their career opportunities?
So by academics here, are you meaning academics when they're in like their first post in permanence, or are you meaning by fixed term research staff, or just to clarify, because my answer is going to be different depending.
Yeah, let's say career staff. Like academic staff.
Academic
postdocs
staff
in a contract.
Postdocs. Okay. I think, what do I see? I think it's hard to generalize because there's lots of people doing lots of really good things. I think a postdoc is short, 2 years, 3 years. You have a list of objectives that you need to fulfill. You know you want to publish if you're thinking about being an academic. And even if you're not thinking about being an academic, you kind of need to have results and data to justify being there. And you need to publish for your group. And it can be really difficult to step back and find out the information about where you go to gain other experiences, particularly if your group leader or PI doesn't get involved in that type of activity. So I can speak from my own experience and know that I've worked for PIs that were involved in consulting and doing work for industry, and that's been a big part of my career all the way through. So it was relatively straightforward for me to say yes to opportunities and get access to that. If you're not in that situation, it can be harder. And I think that's where the fact that we exist and there are people that you can go and ask, even if we don't know the answer, we make it our business to know what's happening in the university, so we can send researchers off to places where they can find this information quicker than they might Googling or aiming to find it on their own. But it is really difficult to make a generalization. I don't think I have enough kind of data on that yet, or have seen enough researchers yet to really give you a clear answer there.
Yeah, fair enough. But broadening the horizon in general seems to be the way to go, even though it might be different for a student versus a researcher. In terms of career development.
Definitely. I think it, and again, I might get shot here, I think it's slightly easier for students to get a diversity of experience, mainly because there is not so much necessarily, there might not necessarily be so much pressure. Everyone knows that as a DPhil here, you've got your 4 years, you've got time, usually it's 4 years, you've got time, you will have some development built into that. You might be doing some away days with your funder. There'll be lots of things built into your educational program because you're a student. when you become staff as a researcher, you do have to be a little bit more active in seeking these things out, I would say.
Then maybe moving on to researchers who actually left their academic role and are now in a non-academic role, being it at a university or at a company not affiliated with the university at all. Do those former researchers usually end up in their roles through those experiences they gathered in parallel with the academic roles, through internships or placements? Or is it usually other routes, direct applications or anything else, how they end up in their non-academic role?
Yeah, I'm going to say this and everyone's going to hate it, but networking. Absolutely. Yeah, laughter. Everyone hates it. But it really does make a huge difference if you make the effort to find out or get to know people in these different areas. I mean, if you hate that and that just makes your ears bleed, then obviously lots of people end up in these roles just by doing applications direct. That's obviously, that is an option. It is there and that can be successful. But along with that, we would also usually recommend you reach out to the people that are putting these adverts out there. So there's still an element of that. But if you can get over the initial horror of it, if you're not scared of it, then yeah, absolutely building your networks is the most valuable thing you can do for your career going forwards. Building a diversity of networks as well. Absolutely.
And for networking, does it need to be this scary in-person opening days from firms and companies where you go for the first time, know no one? Or can you just reach out to someone online in our day and age, drop LinkedIn messages or ask for online coffee chat? Does this also count? Is this as beneficial?
Absolutely.
As going to these events?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say going to events is quite high level networking. It's quite scary unless you're naturally quite good at these types of things, in case naturally you find these things quite easy. Generally, people are not they're not that way inclined. Generally, people find these things quite horrifying to do. It gets better. It's like anything, it gets better with practice. It becomes easier, I think, when you realize networking really is just building relationships with people. It's not meant to be this one-way usage of people, this one-way exchange of, I'll just drop you a message in case you have a job. At that point, really, it's less valuable if you can do this ahead of time, building relationships with people that you are just interested in, that you find engaging, that are doing work in areas that you think are exciting or valuable or important. Those are the networks that are really valuable, actually, going forwards. And usually, then, the places you will ultimately find your most fulfilling opportunities for your career.
So, from what you're saying, it sounds more like there is always an exchange when you reach out to people. Like, I'm interested in your work. Can you tell me a bit about this? This aligns with my own experience. Is it more that type of conversation, then, rather than asking for something specific? Is it really getting into a personal relationship with them more than anything? Or should it always stay focused on the job and they are aware you are eventually interested in getting a job with them?
There's nothing wrong with obviously mentioning that you're interested in going into that sector or you're interested in their area of work and you want to know a little bit more about it. That's obviously fine. It's more powerful if it's just initially the fact that you find them interesting. So again, this comes into the idea of planning ahead and thinking ahead and doing this when you're not under pressure of needing to find a job now. Obviously, the advice changes depending on your circumstances. But if you have the opportunity to start doing this ahead of time and to be a lot more relaxed and just find out information, so informational interviews or just having a discussion with someone or a coffee chat with someone is much more relaxed. It's easier. It generally comes much more naturally to people than having to try and craft a message on LinkedIn of how do I say I want a job without saying that I want a job, or how do I start these interactions. So if you have the time to do it ahead of time, it makes it much less onerous. It makes it much less scary.
And could such a relationship then even develop further into like a mentorship type of relationship? Or is this something very uncommon that if you have repeated conversation with someone, that it's good to then develop that relationship, that you could call someone your mentor to get a step into that industry sector, or even getting an internship out of it, something more than just a conversation? Is this common or is this recommended? Do you see this?
I will say I don't see that all that often. I think it's a good idea. I don't see any reason why it couldn't be possible. It requires a lot of effort on the part of the mentee, let's call them, to actually start that up and to follow that up and to get that going. And if you're prepared to do that, there's no reason why it can't turn into that kind of relationship. As a first off, I generally advise people to approach someone more on a peer-peer level. You're more likely to get a response from someone in that situation. But as you build it and go forwards, there's no reason why that wouldn't be possible and actually would be incredibly valuable. If you know that's the sector you're interested in going into, absolutely, it's kind of quite an interesting idea.
And perhaps it also lowers the threshold a bit if you don't have the ultimate objective of finding your mentor into a specific sector, right? Of more reaching out to different people, learning different things, getting different perspectives. Perhaps that's then the more direct approach. Would you say, or is it?
Yeah, definitely. Always going for breadth is good because you never know what people have the ability to do in terms of their time, their commitments, or their desire to respond back to you. So you have to cast your net quite broadly. I would definitely agree with you there.
So, final question then. What would be your top tip for researchers thinking about going into an industry career? Or should we say a non-academic career?
Oh, there we go. I was just about to ask you, what do you mean by industry career? A non-academic career. So the top tip, I guess there's not one. I'm going to cheat like everybody always does when you're asked for the top one. It really depends on where you're at in your current research contract, your research. If you are at the beginning of a three-year postdoc, if you've already got your last 3 months to go, the advice is going to be somewhat different. At the start or near the start of a contract, when you have a bit longer to go, a year or so, then I would start reaching out to people, building your networks, let people know that you're open to opportunities or interested in other things, and start trying to make it clear to yourself, what am I good at? What are my strengths? What would I like to be doing? What impact would I like to have in the world? You know, what is interesting to me? So you start to address these questions earlier. If you're later, then things become somewhat harder because it does, and I can't stress this enough, it does take time to get a job. A lot of people get frustrated because they've started, it's been a month and they don't have anything. And I wouldn't say there's a perception that going into a different sector is easier or is easier than academia. It's not. They have their own difficulties. And generally, as a rule, the people we see are ridiculously smart, intelligent, driven, ambitious people. They're not picking easy options. So there's not going to be a quick, easy fix for anyone. I mean, anyone could go get a job, but nobody I see just wants a job. So it does take time. So I guess, yeah, my biggest tip is if you're thinking about going outside of academia, you do want to start just gathering information from as many sources as possible as you can. So that's basically finding out information about the world of work around us that's not what we're used to, and spend some time thinking about what do I want out of this? What am I good at? What would I like to do? And then combining those two things usually ends up giving you that clarity around where you should be applying.
Thank you, Susie. That was quite enlightening for me, actually. So thank you so much for that.
Kind.
Thank you for the great advice and such an interesting perspective. Obviously, you've had quite an interesting career yourself, so it's nice to hear about that. And for showing us how fascinating a role as a careers advisor can be. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a delight.
Thank you.